Before I start, I want to give an update. This year with GL, we are going to go back to Honduras, but we're doing a little different. And with that, we have I met with the school and been communicating. We have blocked out from April 18th till June 3rd. That's no mission trip. That's extended stay right there. And with that, I talked to them and I said, because our numbers are less, I said, hey, we want to you know, experience and host. And I said, could I bring a team from our church during that time? I said, you could bring 10 more besides us. And so I said, well, you know, so we were talking, what would be some needs? And I said, well, we could do a project. And she was, I would love teachers. If we could have people that are teachers, and that's their career, and that's what they do, and teach segments of, if it's math, if it's English. So we have opportunities for 5 teachers and 5 people that want to work and do some stuff to come join, and GL is going to host you in Honduras. They're going to be preparing your food. They're going to be running around. They're going to get all the supplies. They're doing everything on that. So that will be... There's like a 2-week window. It won't be for the full 2 weeks, but it's in May, like the 7th through like the 21st-ish. So if you're interested, see Megan. No, if you're interested, you talk to me, you talk to Megan, you talk to the GLs. It's probably going to be about 800 plus airfare. Right now, airfare is 750. I did find yesterday or the other day, if I were to leave through Vancouver, it's 500. And we have a stop in Seattle. Now, don't ask me how that makes sense. So I don't know how, by driving up to Vancouver, I can save $250. Makes no sense. And it's not even on the same airlines. On the same airlines, it's $400 more. So again, it's one of those things. So we're in the process of that. We're excited to try something and to have an experience that hopefully will have a life-changing impact on these young people. And to see those things and to see those things come forth. So again, if you have any questions, if that stirs your heart, you say, hey, I want to go hang out with the GLs in Honduras. You want to see my poor Spanish in action? Come see. We've been, last 2 messages, Ryan talked about dreams, and Justin talked about becoming established. And I feel like there's one aspect that we as a church and we have lived that's so... communicates those things and allows those things to come forth. But when Paul was writing to the Corinthians in 1 Corinthians 4:15, he's making a mention that there's tons of teachers. There's tons of tutors. But he says there's not many fathers. And it started me to think, you know, that was kind of the Generational Hope Christian Center, generational leadership. It's kind of a cornerstone. But what does that mean? What does that look like? How does that... to live out, because that's a great slogan. You can have great slogans, but doesn't mean that you're living it out, that it's active in being established. And I started reading through it, and I started thinking of my life. And I wrote this down. I wrote, I want to teach my kids more than I want to father my kids. What does that mean? What is that? What I realize is that when I go into teach mode, what I really am doing is like, it's correct mode. You're doing it wrong. Do it this way. Because I want to get it right. I'm so concerned that they get it right. So I'm constantly correcting them. Who likes to be told how many times they're doing something wrong? Anybody married? When the wife comes and says, you're doing it wrong. Let me tell you all the things I did right. I've not found a lot of people that enjoy being corrected. And if you're trying to learn something new and you're constantly being corrected, is that fun? Is that enjoyable? Parenting, you're going to discipline enough. But if in the teaching moments, all you're doing is correcting, they're going to be like, I'd rather learn from Chad, Dad. Chad's cool. You're the no dad. And so I started thinking about this. I started thinking of my own life as we got RC cars and they break. And every time they break, that's work. And so I said, don't break them. Because I don't want to do the work to fix them. Because it always enjoys it. It's a process. It breaks. Go to the hobby shop. We have to buy the part. We take it apart. We put it together. And God said, but that's fathering. You're missing the fathering moment, Jim. You tell them not to break it. Every time you do that, you hear your sons taking it apart, saying, Dad, the arm broke. My pinion gear broke. We go down to the hobby store. We go together. We fix it. You're teaching them by being. See, Paul in 1 Corinthians 15, 16 gave the answer. Do you know what his response to the Corinthians were? Fathering, he said, I gotta find it. Fingers are slow today. I exhort you, therefore, be imitators of me. Are you willing, when I talk about fathering, it's fathering and mother. Are you willing to be imitated? Are you willing to be the example? Or do you just want to be the teacher? I don't know if you noticed, but I'm not in the best of shape. I could teach you how to exercise. I could teach you how to do things that I don't do. I know the skills and the things to do them. Fathering is being those things. Mothering is being that example. It's what Paul's saying here. I exhort you as your example. Paul told the Corinthian church, there's not many examples. There's lots of teachers. There's lots of people who give you opinions. I mean, listen to the news. You can get opinions, you can get dialogue, but there's not many fathers that want to be the example. In Genesis 1, the first word of the Lord was, let there be. It's one word. It means to exist, to be, to become, to happen, to come to pass, to be done. Could the same words be said today? My kids don't need to be taught. They need me to be a husband. They need me to be a father. They need me to be an overcomer. Not teach them how to do things that I'm unwilling to do in my own life. See, sometimes I think we parents giving up that we've quit, but we're going to teach our kids not to be like us. I quit in this area in my life. I've given up hope, but you don't want to be like me, so I'm going to teach you to not be like me. But the default thing is they're going to go back to what? I mean, I never lived with my dad once. And there'd be times in my mom would say, you're just like your dad. So you don't have to be around somebody to be like them. It's linked in your DNA. It's in your being. Are you willing to be that thing? My kids don't need me to tell them to forgive. They need to see me forgive. They need a firsthand testimony of the choosing and not to hold bitterness. But if I hold bitterness and I try to teach them not to hold bitterness, well, kids, don't, you know, there's nothing worse than when you're telling your kids something. But, Dad, you remember when? Under the blood. Don't remember. No. But, Dad, you didn't, you know, you don't, you know. Tammy and I are having a discussion. You guys are fighting. No, we're not. Oh, Dad, are you willing to be the example? Are you willing to still say, hey, you know what, I want to live a life of faith? Or have you just said, well, I'm willing to settle. I'm willing to live below the means. But I want you to do great things. I mean, again, I want my kids to be real obedient and listen and do everything right and all that stuff. But do I do that more because I don't want to deal with the work? Because if you're going to have a dream, you're going to have to stand against opposition. There's going to be people that say you can't. And if your kids are just trained, well, hey, just go the path of least resistance, they're not going to overcome. And if you live a life that takes the path of least resistance, they're going to have to undo what you've left. Not many fathers, not many mothers, starters, ones that lead from the front, not from the couch. Oh, Lord, help. Right? Oh, I had a hard day at work. It's tough. Whatever the situation is, but in those moments, are you still willing to exalt and say, imitate me? If you imitate me, you won't go wrong. That's what Paul is trying to get to the Corinthian church. Is saying the Father is willing to be the example. It's willing to say, you can examine my life. That it's okay to put up the picture and say, imitate me as I imitate Christ. But what if I fail? Own it. The goal isn't to be perfect. If perfection is your goal, if the goal is never to make mistakes, I love reading people that are successful, and I find a common thread and theme. Failure did not define them. When they failed, they didn't say, well, I guess I'm Jim Mabry the failure. They said, okay, well, I guess that direction's not the right. Let's go this way. There was a determination. There was a desire not to quit, not to surrender, not to just to say, well, you know. But has that spirit been lost? Do we have that same spot? Is that desire, is it easier just to go along with the crowd? I mean, again, this last election, they called it the afraid to be a Trump supporter. The silent vote. Because they don't want the backlash. Right? Is that how we don't want to be labeled? I want to take, I don't know if we'll get through all this today. The first time ever, if I don't finish, I could say I'll finish next week. But I want to talk about Caleb in the Bible. And I want to go to Numbers because there's an interesting season that Israel was in. Because I think this is where the church can easily find itself. I'm no longer in captivity, but I'm not in the promised land. I'm not living in like the sinful things of the past, but I'm not into the things that were promised. Anybody have an area of your life where you're there? I think we're all there at some point, right? And so God speaks to Moses and says, hey, I want you to do something. I want you to send spies to spy out the land. Numbers 13, and the Lord spoke to Moses, said, send out for yourself men so that they can spy out the land of Canaan. And I am going to give these sons of Israel so that they shall, that these men, each one of the father's tribe, everyone a leader amongst them. And so Moses sent them into the wilderness as they commanded in the Lord to all the men of whom were heads of the sons of Israel. So I looked up those words. Those words are like chief. These men were not just like young punks. These were like the best of the best. These men were examples. It says that they were, that the same word is used to be like the beginning point of something, the headwaters of a river. It didn't make the translation, but in other things, when you look at the word Abba, the first word in the Hebrew dictionary, father is also associated with the chief or the head person of. Can I say that he picked fathers from each tribe to spy out the promised land? One from each. And they were sent out with some specific orders of what to do. And it said, Moses sent the spies out to the land, verse 17, to go up into the hill country and to see what the land was like, whether the people who lived in it were strong, weak, whether they were few or many, and if the land was good or bad, and if the cities were open or if they were fortified, and how the land was, if it was fat or lean, and if there was trees or not, making an effort to go some and to bring back some of the fruit of the land. So that was their job. To go back and to give an account of what the land was like. And again, most of you know the story. You have read it. Didn't go over too well. But I want to pinpoint and look at a couple points of this and look at Caleb's response and Joshua's response versus the rest. And make some, draw some conclusions from there. Verse 27. So now they went in, they were in there for 40 days. They come back. Listen to verse 27. Thus they told him, Moses and the congregation, that the land where they were sent in is certainly does flow with milk and honey. And its fruits. Didn't God say that? The promised land was just as God said. But guess what? That wasn't enough. For 10, that wasn't enough. Verse 28, nevertheless, 2017, but the people, they big. Their city's strong. Their conclusion, why did we come out of Egypt so we would die at the sword and they would plunder and take our wives and our children? That was 10 of the finest men. It's a conclusion. Verse 30, this is Caleb's conclusion. And after this, there's a little chaos. People a little concerned. And then Caleb quieted the people before Moses and said, we should by all means go up and take possession. For we shall surely overcome. Now, how does that person experience the exact same thing as the other 10, but have a completely different view? I mean, were the other guys going to the bathroom and he saw something that they didn't? I mean, in those 40, I mean, how does he have that conclusion and that willingness for that? Because I believe the word of God was enough. The promise of God was enough for Caleb. Is the promise of God enough for you? Is his promises enough to say, you know what? We're going to overcome. Why? How do you know? Who are you? I'm Caleb. Because his word, because it was just as he said. It was a land flowing with milk and honey. So what happens? Chapter 14, the people rebel. Is it possible that as a parent, when I fear man, it's going to lead my kids into a rebellious spirit? The cause of those 10 people's report, because they feared man more than they trusted the word of the Lord, all the people rebelled against God. Do my kids need me to be a teacher when it comes to the promises of God? Well, this is what God says. Well, Dad, when the last time you said, well, let's not focus on the last time Dad did it. Let's just focus on what God said. Let's not focus on me as the example. Let's just focus on, well, God. And so now all of a sudden we have this uproaring. It's bad. It's not good. It's so bad that Moses and Aaron, they fall on their face for the congregation, and they're crying out. And Joshua and Caleb do the same. They rip and tear their clothes, and they speak to the congregation of Israel and say, "The land that we passed through as spies is exceedingly good." They're saying the promises of God are exceedingly good. It's good. And the Lord is pleased with us. He will bring us to the land which he has given, the land flowing with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, and do not fear the people. They're crying out to these people saying, don't fear. Don't listen to the fear of these great men that you think are so good. Just because your leaders have left you, don't fear. Don't let their fear pass you on. They're releasing a fathering thing. Say, don't let those things happen. Don't let the past determine your future. It gets worse. The people's conclusion is, let's stone him. Let's quiet the Father's voice. Let's quiet that spirit. It got so bad, God had to show up. No, literally, it says, then they said, stone him with stones. And then it says, the glory of the Lord appeared. And the 10 minutes, well, okay, put the stones away. It's for my altar, Jesus. I was building an altar to you. I was going to make a little sacrifice. Oh, I wasn't going to kill Caleb and Joshua. No. I love Caleb and Joshua. Now listen to what happens. God not happy. He didn't like that plan. So he's ready to destroy everybody. Moses appeals to him and says, you bet your loving kindness, blah, blah, blah. So his decision is, anyone over the age of 20 doesn't enter. Caleb was 40. So for the next 40 years, Caleb and Joshua, all the people they grew up with, they're going to memorial services. They're letting a whole generation die off. Why? I believe because God didn't want that spirit leading his people. He wasn't going to let the fear of man go into his promise. So the only ones that were over that age of 60 were two people when it came time to inherit. Caleb and Joshua. The only ones that he'd let in. No one else. You're all gone because of the choices of 10 people and because you agreed with their conclusion. And so I'm not going to let that come into my promises. I'm going to say cease and desist. And when you look to the elders in your house, the only ones you're going to see are these two men. So now what happens? God says of Caleb, he had a different spirit. His spirit wasn't the same. So they're right here, Numbers 14, chapter 24. And my servant Caleb, because he has a different spirit, and he has followed me fully. See, that's the heart, that's the father and mother's heart. It's a different spirit. It's a different spirit. It's not just sitting there thinking, well, if I help these people, what's in it for me? It's a different spirit. So for the next 40 years, could you imagine Caleb? Something happened to Caleb on those 40 days. Something took place. I could just see it. His kids, you know, it's time to go to bed. It's, hey, Dad, tell us about the promised land. Oh, man, there's these giants. They're huge. And they got these castles, and they're ours. It's my house. They're up on this hill called Hebron. And it's our home. That's where we're going to live. Every day, Dad, tell me about the promised land. Oh, my gosh, you should have seen the grapes. They're big. You could have picnics with one. Dad, tell me about the promised land. Man, some are going to want the valleys because they like to be shepherds, but we want the mountains. And guess what? God's going to be with us. For 40 years he waited. Is your promise worth waiting for? Or is it like, well, dude, it's been 2 years. I'm 46, midlife. I guess it's time to cash in the stock option, buy a red fancy car. Got to see if I have any appeal left out there in the world. No, it's time to be a father. It's time to reinvest. Because you're going to be the only voice. When everybody looks, all their descendants are buried on the other side. They're going to look to you. Well, the only one that's been there, the only one that's still around, is Joshua and Caleb. I wrote down 7 things that you'll find in a fathering spirit. First two, I won't take too much time because I kind of stole them. Number one, you got to be a dreamer. Number two, you establish things. Get the tapes. But it's true. A dream is willing to pay the cost for something. You know, Caleb could have had a dream and thought, I don't know if I want to stand up against these 10 guys. Do I really? I mean, maybe they're right. I heard someone say something the other day. He said, doubt is not the opposite of faith. But he said, sight is. It was Steve Furtick, and he was preaching about it. And I was thinking, faith is the evidence of things yet not seen. And he said, you might go through seasons of doubt. But sight is your greatest hindrance to faith. Caleb saw something on that mountain. He saw something that he was there. Because they went to this place. Hebron. Hebron means fellowship, friendship. You want to be the friend of God? Go to the high places. That's how you make friends with God. Go to the strongholds. In their thing, it was the father's house of the giants. Is how they named it. And he said, that's what I want to be my home. That's what I want to be. So now all of a sudden, for that rebellion against, for the next 40 years, what voice do you think was going into the people? The spirit of Caleb, Joshua, overcomers. Number three, you got to be willing to fight the good fight. If you want to serve God in your life, there will be a fight. You know, I always look at people that have been married, and I think, was it ever a fight to be married 50 years? Did you ever have to humble yourself in the good fight of faith? Did you have to have fight or faith even in the midst of no sight? Because things were hard. I mean, some people have fought so hard that they were able to overcome infidelity and fight the good fight. And so get a hold of the promises of God. I was telling the students, I said, man, I could tell you of GLs and graduates that dreamed of never having a divorce. Then watching their mate decide, I'm done. What do you do? Who do you blame? Wasn't part of my plan. The easy thing is to point the finger and say, it's all God's fault. But they fought through. They pressed on. Number four. And the weight. Joshua 14:7. I want you to see how Caleb waited. When I was 40 years old, Moses, your servant, the Lord, sent me into the place to spy out the land, and I brought back the word that was in my heart. Nevertheless, the brothers that went up with me, they made the hearts of the people melt with fear, but I followed the Lord fully. And Moses swore to me and said, surely that the land in which my foot had trotted will be my inheritance and the inheritance to the children forever, for you have followed the Lord your God fully. And now behold, the Lord has let me live, and he has spoken these things for 45 years from the time that the Lord had spoke, that the Lord Moses, when Israel walked into the wilderness, and behold, today I am 85 years old, and I'm still strong. I'm still strong. He even says, I'm still as strong as I was then. I don't know about you, but you got to work a lot harder to stay as strong as you were when you were younger. Like if you sort of like when you're 20, to stay at a certain level of strength, no, to stay the same level of strength when you're 40, you got to work three times as hard as you did when you were 20. At 85, I'm just as strong. I'm ready. And then he says, so Joshua blessed him and gave him Hebron. You know what he said? Go get him, Tiger. Oh, man, I've been waiting. There's three kids up there. The sons of Achan, I want them. I'm going. I'm not, you know. Do you think he was sitting there from his rocker saying, okay, kids, time to go get our inheritance. I can't even see straight. Hopefully remember everything I taught you. Give me my teeth. Don't forget my diapers. I'm ready to fight. He wasn't feeble. He wasn't expecting somebody else to do it for him. When the time came, he was ready to act. We live in an age and in a day where we want somebody else to do it for us and give it to us. And God wants to empower you to be the father and mother and to be the head starter, to change the course. Anybody know what tribe Caleb was from? He was from the tribe of Judah. The tribe of Judah. I mean, look, you want to do a fun study. Look into the words of the people that lived and what happened in Hebron. The places that he ascertained, the places that he overcame, and what it did for the nation. When David became king and he ruled over Judah, he ruled from Hebron. That was his seat. Caleb was preparing a way for the king of David to reign before he ever became king of Israel. How well do you wait? How well are you still strong? Or are you just be like irritated? I mean, how many of you go to McDonald's and you order before the person on the inside lane, they take your spot.
was next.
How dare you? How well do you wait? How strong is your faith? Number five, Caleb and Joshua, they had a broken heart. When the people rebelled, their heart broke. I think sometimes when you have a hard heart, you're like, less of them, more of me. Their heart broke for their nation. They cried out, they tore, they repented, they just said, please, they begged. That's the heart of a father. That's a fathering heart. Number six, sometimes will you be the only one? Will you be the only one that does the right thing at work? When everybody else is giving excuses. Do you have enough character in yourself to do the right thing? To stand up and say the thing that needs to be said? To quiet the crowd and say, this is wrong. That's what Caleb did. Maybe it's in the lunchroom and someone's talking inappropriate, saying stuff that's wrong. Do you just pick up your lunch and go out to your car? Or you take a moment and say, hey, this isn't right. Are you willing to stand alone for what's right? So that you can serve God fully, unashamed, unhindered. And the last one, will you leave an inheritance? You know, one of the interesting parts of the whole story of Caleb and Joshua, to me, was his response of his daughter. So Caleb then says, hey, if anybody takes on and takes these people out, I'll give you my daughter. So she's given. And then she's like, I still want something. She goes, I got land out in the valley. I got this. But she, verse 19, she's asking for something more. In verse 18, it says, and when she came to him, she persuaded him, asking her father for a field. So she got off the donkey. And Caleb said to her, what do you want? And she said, bless me. Give me a blessing. She wanted an inheritance. You know, inheritances usually didn't go to the daughters. It only went to the sons. But when you have a fathering spirit, you color outside the lines. And then what's normal is there's a new normal. And your daughters want an inheritance. And they're saying, you know what, I wanted some of that mountaintop. So he gave her some springs, some headwaters, some starting points. What inheritance? It's not just money. But what inheritance are you leaving for your children? Imagine what the other 10 left their kids. Hey, who's your dad? Hey, isn't he the one that gave the bad report that said the enemies were too big? Yeah. Oh. Man, aren't you thankful for Caleb? What inheritance is being left? I'm going to just park her right there for now and change gears a little bit. Because in GL, I've been asking the students, I've been saying, guys, you're not just mere spectators. And so this week, I was asking, I'm speaking, I said, what are you guys feeling? What's the word of the Lord? And they're like we're going to have to share? what are you going to make us do? I was telling Tiani, I said, I'll pull a Drew Roos on you. And she's like, what? When I was in Louisiana, we had a pre-service prayer, and Brother Drew's praying, and halfway through the prayer, he goes, and Lord, I defer the rest of my prayer to Brother Jim. And I was like, so I just jumped right in, started praying, and But I mean, unannounced, not asked, just right in the middle of his prayer. I defer the rest to Jim. And so again, I started asking them, I said, what are you guys feeling? And these were the words that they said. These were the things they felt. And I feel like these words are for you. One, they said, together. I just feel like the Spirit to be together. One said, a fresh touch and renewing of the Holy Spirit. Two felt the word healing. And one with healing felt reconciliation. Does anybody need to be reconciled? You need reconciliation in your life. One felt faith. Another felt peace. Another one just said, this is home in his presence. And so what we're going to do, we're going to close. And if that's you, they want to pray for you. They want to release their faith. They want to step out. And I said, man, let's go down swinging. Let's go down swinging at the fences. Let's believe God for those things. Let's believe God. Because I could sit there and try to teach him, or I could just let him be. I could try to tell him how to do something, or I could let him encounter him. And so we're going to just close in worship, and you during the song, if you want to go, you can. But we're just going to have the altars open. And if you want ministry, if you want someone with young faith to breathe life into a situation and really settle, I just encourage you to come forward. If you don't, hey, doors are yours. You can go. And so we're going to sing, but would you just stand as we sing, as we get the right key and the right sound? For I shall not sing with the song.